We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everyone. My name is Adam Witten. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Vocal Distancing, where we catch up with broadcasters from around the country. If you want to go back and find previous episodes, the easiest way to do it is to subscribe to the College Sports Now podcast feed. All of these episodes presented by our College Sports Now platform. Today, we are visiting with three broadcasters from different parts of the country. We're welcoming Eli Gold, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. We have Tony Caridi, voice of the West Virginia Mountaineers, and Josh Lewin, the voice of the UCLA Bruins. Fellas, thanks for joining us. We got a lot we want to cover today. I'm going to ask you a quick question. I don't know if it's a very simple answer, though, but I want to ask you, first of all, as we're entering, what, week 4 or 5, depending on what part of the country you're in this stay-at-home and quarantine life, what do you miss most right now? Tony, we'll start with you.
Well, I guess, you know, if it were a regular time of the year, believe it or not, I'm going to say this, I think for the first time, I'm going to miss spring ball and the spring game. I think that we kind of used to take it, you know, for granted that it was, you know, just that time of the year. But, you know, in all seriousness, I miss the month-long spring drills to see how the team is coming together. And then ultimately this coming Saturday was supposed to be West Virginia's spring game. So I'll miss that. And then, you know, we do a lot of our fundraising. We start the Coach's Caravan this time of the year, and all of that obviously is gone. So I think it's seeing what the team is going to look like in the upcoming season. That's kind of always the marker before they go away for a suspended or long period of time before you see them again. So I miss that part of it.
You know, here in Alabama, it's basically the same thing. You know, we had our A-Day game due to be played this weekend, and that's gone out the window. I personally do a lot of SEC baseball and softball on the SEC network. That assignment would have continued until late May, mid to late May. So I miss that. So it's like everybody else. You miss the campus atmosphere as much as it's nice to be home and around the family. This is not normal. It's not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you guys are so right. And as much as it is nice to connect and reconnect with a lot of the people who were so important to you, you forget how important the campus community is as well, you know, and just being around those people and that energy. I think, you know, you got to kind of create your own energy now and your own passion is what it comes down to. We're all in this land of make-believe to keep ourselves interested and engaged. So I find myself watching old UCLA games on YouTube, and you know, Eli, you've been there for a million years. I've been here for four at UCLA, so my basin to jump into isn't nearly as big. But you know, just to put that back in your lungs, I think familiarity is really important for all of us right now, and the sports that we cover, the teams that we cover, that's our comfort food, and I'm taking a big bite of that too.
Exactly. We've been watching all sorts of old games. Of course, our Crimson Tide Sports Network has been repackaging our broadcasts from years ago. We have selected a dozen of the biggest Alabama football games. We have taken the broadcasts, eliminated pregame, halftime, and postgame, edited them down just a bit. We've written opens and some bridges for inside the game itself. So that's been nice. And personally, the biggest accolade that's come my way here lately is I was named the captain of the U.S. Olympic Lazy Boy Sitting Team, which I have perfected, to be quite honest with you. So, but yeah, you're right. We need to be doing something, and watching games on the tube, which I have been doing, not just Alabama. We watched some ACC games the other day, my wife and I sitting around. You just need that to keep yourself going.
You know, I think one of the most interesting things of watching television or seeing digital content in this day of social distancing is you get a peek into people's home lives. I mean, everybody's on Zoom calls or video chats or whatever, and it's all from their living room and their home office. And so you get a glimpse into what it's like at home. So paint us the picture beyond maybe what people can see on their screen watching this right now. Paint us the picture of your life at home. Josh, let's start with you.
Well, I don't want to make my landlocked buddies all jealous. I got the Pacific Ocean out my window right here, so I'm not going to turn the laptop that way. I'll turn it towards my desk here, which is a little bit messy at this point. I've been trying to do as much creative content as possible. I'm not in the Lazy Boy annals, unfortunately. I couldn't quite make that jump. But, you know, of all things, I found that doing this Throwback League project, which is basically it's March Madness with World Series baseball teams. It's something I started before we had ever heard of COVID-19, but it's keeping me busy. It's a podcast that is getting some traction, and it's getting me down some rabbit holes and researching some great World Series teams from my generation, which is basically mid-70s to mid-00s. So that Throwback League podcast project I do from this desk, and that's keeping me busy. But other than that, you know, trying to socially distance myself but also get outside. You know, I mean, I'm so blessed to be in California where it's basically 65 or 70 all the time. So I like my home office. It's fine when the dog's not running through it. But to get outside and get some fresh air is kind of my number one.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, to be quite honest with you. You know, this has been an interesting deal, I think, for everybody. How would you like to stay at home? I like it a lot, quite honestly. I can do everything, and you guys know this. I can do everything that I need to do here. I still do go in. I do a podcast, which we tape in a studio, and I do a daily talk show that I've been doing for 100 years. So we still have been able to do that. And believe it or not, a couple weeks ago, we had Neil Brown, our football coach, on, and he said, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "Go ahead, fire away. What is it?" He said, "How can you guys in sports survive now that nothing is going on?" And I told him, I said, "Actually, in certain areas, you can get a ton accomplished now because everyone is at home, right? So when it comes to interviewees, I said, what would the chance of me be getting you for 30, 40 minutes like we are right now if spring ball was going on?" So I have found that interviews are easy because you can't use the excuse of "I'm traveling, I can't be there, I'm going to be at work." Everyone's locked in, so that's been really, really good. And I think content-wise, we've been, you know, we've delivered a lot of good stuff. I spent 40 minutes with Bob Huggins yesterday. I've got Neil Brown. We've got three new staff members in football, so we've got to meet all of those guys. So it's worked out well. And as far as the other side of it, as soon as I get home, I love to cook, and so I've been cooking a lot of different things, and that's been a lot of fun.
And, you know, in all seriousness, I laughed about the sitting in the lazy boy, though I have done my share of that. But we too have talk shows. This Saturday was to have been the A-Day game, as I had mentioned earlier, the spring football game. And though the game won't be played, we still have the responsibility of providing our radio stations with programming. So we are doing a talk show. Myself, Coach Saban, our director of athletics, Greg Byrne, and other guys, my broadcast partners on the show and so on. So we've got that going on. I'll be sitting at this very same seat doing that. We have gone outside. We have had some great weather here, temperatures in the 70s, low 80s. So my wife works all the time in the garden. If you know, you ever wonder where she is, she's out there in the garden. I'll be sitting out reading, you know, books. That's one thing. I've had a chance to catch up on my reading and go back to a lot of the books that I had gotten as gifts over the years that I just haven't had time to read. But all of that is fine and good. It's just not what we do. And, you know, you have to just kind of put up with it and count the days off on the calendar and hope we get to the end of this this problem era in our nation's history.
Hey, Josh, you mentioned the podcast project that you're working on, the Throwback Baseball League. And I wanted to ask each of you, and Josh, you can elaborate on that, but also pose the question to Eli and Tony, what are some new projects that you guys are working on, or maybe just a skill you're trying to acquire? Maybe it's gardening, maybe it's cooking, whatever it may be. I think folks would be curious to hear some things you're trying to do while you have some more time at home during a time of year when maybe you wouldn't necessarily have it.
Yeah, not to get too philosophical or preachy, but I mean, I think that the only blessing out of all of this is it's forced us, I call it the great pause. Yeah, I mean, we're forced to get off that treadmill and just kind of sit and think and meditate. And, you know, as Eli said, there are books to read, there are languages to learn, there's all kinds of things we could be doing. And frankly, it's a little overwhelming because there's so much I want to know, so many apples to bite into. And I think I've gravitated these last couple of weeks to, again, what's familiar, you know, just watching some UCLA stuff and doing something in the creative space. I was one of those knuckleheads that was doing the play-by-play calls of, like, you know, microwaving a taquito and stuff like that and just kind of putting it out there on social media to give people a laugh. But, you know, but the more I did that, the more I kind of remembered that, you know what, I mean, that is our blessing, our calling, you know, that we do have that ability, I guess, to connect with people in the sports universe. So I don't want to completely walk away from that, even though there are no sports right now. So yeah, that Throwback League project, which again, just accidentally happens now to be the only game in town. It's this weird amalgam of March Madness and baseball. And it's the two things we're really missing over the course of March and April. So, you know, I've been doing, you know, I thought I was going to just record one episode a week. Now instead I'm doing two or three just because I feel like there's traction there and people kind of want the product. But yeah, Adam, to your point, I think it's really important for all of us just to breathe right now. Now that there is no pollution in LA, might as well take advantage and breathe the air in and go outside and kind of be one with nature a little bit. And I'm with you. I mean, there's, you know, when I kind of recalibrate a little bit, that's my next thing is what is my next thing? You know, I mean, I want to finally learn Italian because I got time to do it now.
I would agree with Josh. Tremendous. I think the way you said it, this is the great pause, right? It's the great unanticipated pause. And I think one of the beneficial unintended consequences of all of this is that we can kind of stop. And because we go 100 miles an hour, you kind of do get a new perspective. And I think that what we're dealing with in regard to the virus and how people are dealing with it, I think you need to be extremely judicious and how you handle that, right? And so I think that while we have to grasp the seriousness and the severity of what this is, at the same time, people also want that release. And I think if we're doing our job properly, we give them both of those things, right? So I mentioned the talk show that I do. I can't go on at the start of that talk show and all of a sudden pretend this is not happening. So I started off each night with a daily update from our news people. Okay, that's that perspective then. We kind of move into it, and do more of the sports talk aspect of it. But to pretend it's not happening, I think would be incorrect. And in regard to what's that one thing that I've been trying to do, haven't done, but now have gotten back into it, believe it or not, for a guy from Western New York, I've always wanted to play the banjo. And I tried it unsuccessfully, Eli, a couple of years ago, and
really
move around and put it away. But now, thank goodness to YouTube and some really good instructors, the last week or so, I've gotten back into it. And I said, I'm going to finally conquer this. So we'll see how that all goes.
I got a harmonica right here if you want to borrow that, Tony. That's my next thing.
Yeah, that would be good.
You have like a family band or something.
There you go. The Traveling Wilburys remade, if you will. But no, I've not gone in the route of the music world. As a matter of fact, I can't sing. Last time I sang the national anthem, people from every country stood up. I mean, it was very embarrassing. So I'm staying away from the music end of things. But you know what we've been doing, really? I guess it's because it's what we do. We have done, and I say we, talking about the other guys on our broadcast as well, we have done tons and tons of radio interviews with our affiliates. That's a normal thing anyway, I'm sure, for all of us. But we have really heavied up on that. I was just on with our Honolulu affiliates yesterday. And just talking, obviously, with the draft coming up and interest about Tua, they were interested in. But we've done tons of morning shows and afternoon and evening drive talk shows and so on. You know, I've just been doing more busy work, you know, cleaned up the files, got everything that, you know, you kind of throw it into a corner. You do that. The only other thing I have done is I listen to a lot of broadcasts, and quite honestly, I will steal ideas from other broadcasters. I was listening the other day to a tape of Kevin Harlan doing a Monday Night Football, and I love Kevin's work. I'm particularly enamored with the degree of descriptives that he uses, and even though I think I may do a good job on the air, you know, I'll listen and I'll say, darn, you know, that's a pretty good idea right there. So I've spent time while I'm sitting here at the desk doing something else. I've always got something playing, some game, some something. And, you know, you listen, even our own games. I'll sit here sometimes, you know, you don't ever get a chance to do that. I'll sit here and I'll lean back and I'll close my eyes and listen to the broadcast and make sure that I can follow the football, that I can follow exactly what's happening. Because, you know, I'm of the belief you can never describe too much. There's always something to describe on radio. And many times I will just sit here and I'll lean back and just listen with my eyes closed and make sure I could follow the ball and follow this. And so, you know, I'm doing a lot of that. I'm not taking up the banjo. I don't do a podcast at this point, but there's always something to do. But the biggest thing has been talking to our affiliates. You know, we're on something like 90 stations across the country, thank God. And I think I've done just about every morning show on all of those affiliates, which is good, though. It keeps them in touch just because they don't live in Tuscaloosa or any neighboring community. The Bama fan in Richmond, Virginia is still as much a part of the heartbeat of the university as are the folks who live locally. So it's been good to connect with those folks somewhat one-on-one, if you will.
Hey, would any of you guys that brought up something musically, would you be willing to give us a little taste of what you've learned at the end of this episode?
I'll be the first on that. Absolutely not. Not ready yet. Not ready yet.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I'd be like, you know, the theme from the Rockford Files could be like that. You know, I could just like pick it up and I'd have it in 24 hours. I actually, in a former life, I actually, and you guys may or may not know this, but I actually used to play piano bar, put myself through college doing that in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah, so I mean, wow. You know, didn't bring the piano when I moved from New York out here to the West Coast. I don't have one. I did go get a Yamaha keyboard and I noodle around on that sometimes. But it's no. The short answer, Adam, is no. You're not going to get any music out of any of us, I don't think. But if I can figure out the harmonica by April 29th, I mean, even just the rudiments of it, that would be really, really cool.
Hey Josh,
Okay,
now
well,
that you've
maybe.
got a few years, you got a few years behind you, how was the transition from the East Coast to the West Coast, the pro game to the collegiate game? How easy or difficult was that for you now in retrospect?
That's a great question, Eli. And I still keep my foot in it just a very little bit. I mean, I was trying to have my cake and eat it too for a few years, not only geographically, because I was in New York and in California. I was doing professional sports and collegiate sports, and at some point the bridge just gives way. I'm not 25 anymore, and that coast to coast ping pong got to be a little much. I'm really glad that I chose the way I chose, and I don't mean that dismissively of the NFL. I still have a small hand in Major League Baseball. I haven't given it up completely, but it's receded to the point where I just so enjoy the college experience. I'm sure for the same reasons that you guys do, because it just is so obvious in terms of bringing everybody together, from the tailgating to the wearing of the colors, to everybody knows the same songs and hand claps and all of that. It's just so unifying and very pure. And I know, if you wanted to be cynical, you could talk about, all kinds of things within the NCAA. Oh yeah, pure, right? Well, no. I don't even want to get there. I'm talking about you're talking about teenagers and kids in their early 20s that are becoming adults, and we're seeing them ripen on the vine. We're seeing them mature not only on the athletic field of play, but off the field as well. And telling their stories and kind of helping them out into the world a little bit, I think is a really cool thing to be a part of. So yeah, I mean, short answer, Eli, I miss, I mean, like when the Mets were in the World Series, I was glad I was still there for that.
Yeah.
If they get there again, I'll be like, oh, why did I give that up? But for the most part, I just, even a non-conference UCLA against New Mexico State game is so gratifying just to be around that environment. So no, I think I made the right call for sure.
You don't have to tell me. There's nothing like it. Doesn't matter who Bama's playing. You got 101,000 folks at Bryant-Denny. I mean, if the hairs don't stand up on the back of your neck, something's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And you're in a great
Yeah.
spot. And Tony, you too. I mean, that, this is not to be dismissive of the UCLA experience at all, but it's in an urban environment, and let's face it, the Lakers are doing well or the Dodgers are doing well. Sometimes UCLA slides way down the ladder in terms of local consciousness. West Virginia fans, they will literally move mountains to come see the Mountaineers. And Eli, you hit on it, but my goodness, you can't have a more impressive fan base than Alabama. People will absolutely do what they need to do to get to a radio to hear your voice. So to be a part of that environment, and you guys live it in a macro sense, I don't think there's anything like it.
Hey, can I jump in here? I got a story on Josh. Josh, I've
Oh.
never shared this with you. All right, you ready for this?
No.
So, mid-1980s, Syracuse Chiefs AAA baseball, Rochester Red Wings. All right, you with me so far?
Yeah, I
So,
am.
at that time, the student radio station at Syracuse, WAER, did the AAA games, right? And that turned out a bunch of broadcasters. I mean, my group was John McDonough, Greg Papa, a bunch of these guys. So I go to visit the guys that are doing the Syracuse broadcast in Rochester because I live not far away. We walk into the press box, and this was like July 3rd, July 4th, the 4th of July weekend. And there's a little kid in the press box in the corner doing the game into a tape recorder. And I went in and I said to my guys, I said, "Who's the little kid?" And they said, "Oh, that's Josh. He comes here all the time and does the games." And as time goes on, I went like, "Wait a second. That they go, "Yep, that's the guy." So
That
that
little
was the
pissant,
first time. So how old were
And
you
you know
when you
what?
started doing that?
So I talked my way into that press box when I was 15, by the time I was 16, thank goodness they had a general manager in Rochester that had kind of a Barnum and Bailey mentality. He thought it would be a hoot to put the teenager, the 10th grade kid on the air to like read the scores and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I talk to school groups, church groups, whatever, all the time about exactly this now that, you know, don't sell yourself short on where you want to get. You know, I mean, you just keep working at it. And, you know, by my senior year of high school, they actually had me doing like the middle innings. And when I went away to college, you know, I would come back and I structured my class schedule so I could get like, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday all off so I could meet the Rochester team on the road in Toledo to like get my middle innings in. And you know, when you've got that kind of passion for something, and it doesn't have to be sports casting, but you know, I tell people all the time, until somebody tells you to sit the F down, just keep going, you know, just keep doing it. And I remember Tony, I remember you guys, Dan Hoard, who's the voice of the Cincinnati Bearcats, voice of the Bengals, Sean McDonough, who I've been working with the Red Sox now. It was a great group. I mean, those Syracuse guys. You mentioned Papa, Craig Minervini was there. I mean,
Absolutely.
just a who's who of talent. And yeah, I embarrassed the hell out of myself. I had this squeaky little voice. I had acne and, you know, the braces, the whole thing. And I'd just sit there and call the Red Wings and the Chiefs. But yeah, you know, it gets you where you want to get. And retroactively, thank you for not kicking me like clear out that window and down onto
No,
the field for being so obnoxious. So.
I'll never forget that. And Eli, here's my story on you.
Uh-oh.
1993, Alabama, Tennessee. I was doing the game for what was then the Mutual Game of the Week, and it's in
Right.
Birmingham. And they put us on the camera deck directly below you. So I get there and I look up and I go, "Whoa, Eli Gold! Holy heck, that's Eli Gold!" So I look down on the field, and Tennessee is wearing white jerseys with those light orange numbers. And
Yep.
I'm looking at the field and I looked up at you and I go like, "Can you see those numbers?" And you go, "Those blankety blanks do it all the time just to make you mad."
You know, the story behind that was in the old days when they had black and white coaching film. You used to have to trade film with your upcoming opponents. Well, Johnny Majors, who was then the coach of Tennessee, realized that the light orange number on the white background was not able to be seen on the black and white coaching films. So that's what they wore. Then over the years, they put a little black trim around it. It's still impossible. I mean, my spotter and I, for a myriad of reasons, hate playing Tennessee, but that's another one. You're sitting there saying, "I can't see the darn numbers." But that was where that came from. It was Johnny Majors messing with the upcoming opponents who couldn't see who was who on the black and white coaching films.
Crafty football coaches.
Yep.
Anything to gain in a competitive advantage. You know, this kind of leads me into another question, and this spawned some great stories last week when we were visiting with Brian Estridge, Jones Angel, and Matt LePay. Tell us about, and I think we already know Josh's as a teenager, but tell us about your first on-air experience, the very beginning, the genesis of your career, speaking into a microphone. Eli, let's start with you.
Well, the absolute very genesis was with the now dearly departed Mutual Broadcasting System. That tells you how many years I've been around. When I was a kid, like you guys, I'd go to Yankee Stadium, and for 60 cents, I'd sit in the bleachers and practice my play-by-play into a tape recorder. But I met folks, I got to meet people. I end up going to Mutual as an audio engineer, a summer replacement audio engineer. Long story short, somebody didn't show up. We've all heard the story. Who knows sports? Who can sit in? And I sat in and did a couple of sports casts, which were absolutely terrible, I might add. But I did a couple of sports casts on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Then, still in high school, I got a job as an office boy at Madison Square Garden after having sold peanuts at the garden and hanging out in the upper deck near the press box. I didn't care about selling peanuts. I wanted to meet the broadcasters. And long story short, I ended up meeting some folks from the old Eastern Hockey League, which was the league about which the movie Slapshot was made. The lowest of the low of hockey. You get cut from the Eastern Hockey League, you were waiting on tables the next day. I then got a job broadcasting the old Long Island Ducks of the Eastern Hockey League. That was the league in which you'd play for 45 seconds and fight for 45 minutes.
They're putting on the foil, right, Eli?
Exactly, like the Carlsons, their real name, Carlson, the Hansen brothers in the movie. They put the foil on, the fights were legendary. But that was an interesting era. I was doing the Long Island Ducks. The Long Island team had a television package, and John Paul Della Camera, JP Della Camera, who does a lot of soccer now, he and I would work on that. Bob Costas was doing the Syracuse Blazers of the Eastern Hockey League. Shortly thereafter, the Maine Mariners came into existence, and a guy by the name of Mike Emmerich was doing their games, Doc Emmerich, as we now know him. But I got involved doing the Eastern Hockey League, having met people. And again, I was terrible, absolutely awful. But it was a low-impact broadcast. The owner really didn't care that much. He just wanted his games on the air. It was a radio station that could barely be heard across the street. The guy paid me a $50 gift certificate to Sears at the end of the year.
Nice.
Took care of my expenses, but gave me a $50 gift certificate to Sears. But fellas, as we all know, my real pay was being on the air for 76 games in a situation where very few folks could hear me. So I could really comfortably work on my presentation and try to get better. So my original job was doing on air for Mutual, doing a couple of sportscasts in and around my engineering work. But my first real play-by-play was in the Eastern Hockey League when I was probably 16 and a half, 17 years old.
Amazing.
Yeah. I started school at the State University of New York at Geneseo, also known as the Hidden Harvard. I was there for 2 years. And Josh, you probably are familiar with Geneseo, right? So you're a Rochester guy.
They would come in and play Brockport. Absolutely.
Exactly. So the student radio station at Geneseo, when I was a freshman, would do the high school games of Geneseo High School. They had a game against the Lions, which happens to be Jim Boeheim's high school alma mater. So I went out there. I was supposed to be the color analyst in the game, and that's where it bit me. And I said to myself, I'm doing this. And I stayed there for 2 years. I transferred to Syracuse, and I ran into a bunch of great, great talented guys. And as a result of that, went to the Carrier Dome, sat in the very top of the dome with a tape recorder and a manila folder into a cassette player. And you would do the game, you would submit it to the sports director, who was also a student. They would critique you, but it was then and there. And like Eli said, I was absolutely terrible in the beginning. Had a couple of occasions where I thought to myself, I can't do this. Syracuse played Nebraska, the great Nebraska team that went for the two-point conversion to beat Miami for the national championship. It was that team. So it was Turner Gill, Mike Rozier, all of those great, great players. They beat Syracuse 63-7, and I was doing the game with Greg Papa, and I got so flustered because they were running option, and Turner Gill would come out. I thought he would keep it. He'd hand off to Mike Rozier. I'm calling Turner Gill, running an option down the far sideline, and Mike Rozier is going down the nearest sideline. So I was totally flummoxed by it. But like you said, Eli, you need reps in this business. You need to have bad things happen so that you can learn from those and adjust from those. And fortunately, I wasn't so horrible that the FCC barred me for life. I was able to persevere and get through it. And through over a period of time, you kind of finally get the hang of it.
Josh, anything you want to add about your experience? Anything earlier than that?
No, although I've worked in a bad hockey league too. The East Coast Hockey League became kind of like the new age Eastern Hockey League by the early 90s. And Johnstown was in that one, right? That's kind of where they modeled the whole slap shot. The Johnstown Chiefs were really the Johnstown Chiefs. So, busing from, there were some bigger cities in there. I worked for Richmond, the Richmond Renegades in 90. one, I guess that would have been basically my first shot out of college. And the one thing I remember, I mean, other than these box, Knoxville to Roanoke to, all these bus rides would take forever. We pulled into Cincinnati. Cincinnati had a team called the Cyclones. I had slept through the 7-Eleven stop where the guys could like get off and get their hot dogs or whatever or their pizzas at 7-Eleven. That's like all that they would do was stop off. The bus would do that for you. But I had missed it. So when we pulled up, they didn't go to the hotel. They went right to the arena, the old Cincinnati Gardens or whatever it was called, for a skate, like an afternoon skate. And I hadn't eaten lunch. I was just hungry and thinking, what am I doing? And I just and to me, like the low moment was I was trying to break in to whatever little side closets I thought might have like some food storage in there. And sure enough, I was able to jimmy my way in. There was a thing of hamburger buns. And I remember sitting in this corridor eating a bag of hamburger buns that I had stolen basically from the Cincinnati Gardens and thinking like, okay, so like everybody I know at Northwestern is now like a hedge fund guy, or they're like off and doing something, or they're like saving lives, they become a doctor. And I'm like sitting in my sweatpants eating hamburger buns. But like you said, Eli, you wouldn't trade it once you really
Not
thought
at
about
all.
it, because it was the invaluable experience you needed to make your mistakes and get better when only nine people were listening, So,
Yeah.
and I loved it. I mean, it was actually Marty McSorley's brother, Chris, was a coach of
Sure.
that team. We'd get ejected every other game from the bench, just throwing crap all over the place at the referees. And you look back, and you realize, I mean, my gosh, for me, that's almost 30 years ago. And it might have seemed unseemly at the time, the long bus rides, whatever you want to say, but no, I wouldn't trade that for anything. I'm glad I had that experience for sure.
And I would venture a guess without knowing for sure that I know I have used some of those stories years down the road when I was blessed to do the St. Louis Blues and the Nashville Predators. I know I told some Eastern Hockey League stories on the air when they were out fixing a rut in the ice or something had gone wrong. I know I said, this reminds me of, when John Brophy did this in Johnstown and yada, yada, yada. Those stories are invaluable. They really are.
You're so right, Eli. And it's one of those life lessons. You get wisdom as you get older. But I think that the people that are most interesting, and the reason I could listen to you all day long and Tony too, is you've had this depth of experience. All these interesting things that have happened in your life, and it made me realize at some point along the line, I got to get out and start living a little bit. If all you do is nerd out and research and watch tape and all of that, you're not acquiring life experience. And I think more than anything else, that's what makes you what you eventually become, for good or for bad. And you guys both have become these amazing, not only broadcasters, but role models and people. But you're a function of what you do and where you come from. So to get out and have those experiences, absolutely super important.
Those are great stories, guys. And we like the opportunity to kind of spin it forward now, and you think about the early days of your career and where you've come from. And now all three of you are voices of prestigious universities in different corners of our country. So going back to your career, and maybe this is college, or maybe this is something else, previous to where you are now. What's the most memorable game or moment that you've called from your careers? Go ahead, Tony.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I had a little breakup there. Basketball wise, was 10 years ago, 2010. West Virginia played an unbelievably talented Kentucky team in which all five of those starters were drafted in the first round, the championship game of the Eastern Region. And it coincidentally happened at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse, where I went to school. And West Virginia had an unbelievable night. Every field goal that it made in the first half was a three-point shot. They did not make a two-point shot in the entire first half, close game, and they beat that Kentucky team to go to the Final Four. It was an unbelievable night. First time West Virginia had gone to the Final Four since the Jerry West team of 1959. And then in football, we've had fortunately we've had a lot of great wins since I've been here. But I would have to say there's a lot of them. It's kind of like which is your favorite kid. But West Virginia beating Georgia when the Sugar Bowl was played in the Georgia Dome because of the Hurricane Katrina, it was not allowed to be played in New Orleans. And Georgia had just won the SEC championship there at the Georgia Dome. And a Pat White, Steve Slayton team with Rich Rodriguez as the head coach went in there and were able to beat the Georgia Bulldogs. That was one of the more surprising and satisfying wins.
Those are cool. Those are really cool. You know, it's funny. I'm just thinking off the top of my head because I've only been with UCLA 4 years now. And other than the Lonzo Ball year, when unfortunately De'Aaron Fox of Kentucky dropped like 39 on them in the Sweet 16 and out they went. You know, I haven't really had that signature UCLA basketball moment yet in football. You know, we've been to the Cactus Bowl since I've been here and that's it. So, you know, with Chip Kelly here now, I'm waiting for that to turn the corner. Josh Rosen's year was special. You know, they came from 34 points down to beat Texas A&M opening night, Josh's last year. That was pretty cool. That was fun and memorable. But, you know, it's funny. Baseball-wise, I think the most memorable stuff I've been a part of, I wasn't even doing play-by-play. I was just thinking about that off the top of my head. When I was first starting out doing pre and post for the Orioles, you know, I went to try to go interview Jeffrey Mayer when, you know, that little kid reached over at Eli's Yankee Stadium there and, you know, changed that whole playoff series, you know, the Derek Jeter home run, and was doing sidelines. That was the dugout reporter, kind of the Ken Rosenthal for Fox during the Bartman game. And we didn't know it was the Bartman game at the time. In fact, when the game ended and I had my on-field interview with Derek Lee, as I remember, because I'm like 5 foot nothing and he's like 6'8". So it was this ridiculous looking interview. I think like the third question I asked Derek Lee was, hey, how about that play over there? I mean, which is why I don't do sidelines anymore. But football-wise, for the NFL, the Chargers came close a couple times. I mean, they really came close a couple times. Billy Volek at Indianapolis had to take over for Phillip Rivers when he hurt his MCL, and they had this incredible comeback to beat Peyton Manning. And they were one win away from the Super Bowl. I just remember coming back to San Diego and there being thousands and thousands of Charger fans meeting the buses and all that. So those things stay with you. And, you know, Eli's had championships, you know, here, there and everywhere. So I can't compete with that. But, you know, just being around the fans when they're worked up about something like that, I think that's what you remember.
Well, what you've done is spectacular, man. You've been places I've never been and done things I've never done. So we all have our little niche. I think there are a few things that come to mind following up on what Josh said. I've been blessed to have broadcast 8 national championship football games, 6 of which Alabama has won, 2 they have not. Of that list, maybe certainly the most impactful was the most recent, the overtime win over Georgia when Tua hit Devontae Smith on that touchdown in overtime. That's one. The rest of the game wasn't much because Bama struggled all evening long. The finish was darn good for Crimson Tide fans. So that one comes to mind, as does the win over Texas for the national championship in the Rose Bowl, because back in the 20s, when West Coast college football was the thing and Southern football had very little regard, Alabama went west and won 2 Rose Bowl games against West Coast teams and heightened the awareness of the Southern collegiate football game. So going back to the Rose Bowl, winning in that same stadium, you know, the San Gabriel Mountains off to your left and the whole bit, that was awfully impactful. The other events, though, were personally important. Having sold peanuts, as I said earlier, at Madison Square Garden, going back and doing my first telecast from the Garden was like, oh, my God. I mean, there's Section 440, Row FC2, where my buddies and I used to have Rangers seats, and now I'm doing a broadcast there. Doing my first NFL game for Sports USA. I mean, whoever imagines, who gives themselves the right to ever imagine that they would do an NFL broadcast let alone 10, 11 years worth now. So doing that first one was so impactful in my mind. So I really can't say what any one thing is. A lot of them are personal, you know, but again, the University of Alabama in these 32 years now, they've given me some absolutely.
Those are tremendous stories. Thank you to all of you for sharing those. And I wish we could sit here and just listen to the three of you swap stories for another 2 or 3 hours. But I do have to get to, you guys are trusted voices amongst your fan bases of Alabama, West Virginia, and UCLA. So Josh, starting with you, what is something as a final thought that you want to say to UCLA fans that may be watching?
Well, I mean, good times are ahead, just, you know, in 140 characters or less. Chip Kelly certainly knows what he's doing, and you've got the Rose Bowl as your backdrop. I mean, UCLA football is going to be great again. Basketball is heading there, maybe even a little quicker. Mick Cronin, Pac-12 Coach of the Year. There's buy-in now. Good recruiting class. That's going to be really fun really soon. It was getting fun right at the end of this year. So there have been some storm clouds that were on the on the approach. I think they passed. I think it's good times ahead.
I think from an Alabama standpoint, the basketball program is in magnificent hands with Nate Oates. He has really started turning the team around, and they were fun to watch and will continue to grow. The baseball and softball programs, both top 25 ranked, so that was exciting to see. The other thing is, of course, with football, as long as you've got Nick Saban, you've got the best in the business running your program. Yeah, a lot of people were upset because the Tide lost 2 games last year. That was, you know, that's the way things have become here at the University of Alabama. Bottom line is this: the man recruits, the man is nonstop. He is working day in, day out. The Crimson Tide haven't gone anywhere, and they will be back again this season. Whenever the games are played, they'll be back challenging for the national championship. So it's still a very, very good time in Tuscaloosa, and everybody needs to keep their chin up and enjoy it.
You know, from a West Virginia perspective, kind of similar to what both of you guys are saying, we're in a really good position right now as far as the athletics go. Obviously, on the basketball side, Bob Huggins is here. He has elevated himself to the 5th winningest coach now in college basketball history. He's on his way to the Hall of Fame. Because of the stoppage of play, we'll never know exactly where this team was going to go. They had 21 wins on the season and seemed to have that uptick getting ready for the tournament. They pretty much return intact next season. So West Virginia will be a preseason top 25. In football, Eli, we took one of your guys from the state of Alabama, Neil Brown, who was at Troy, is an absolute gem. And it's only a matter of time. Much like Josh said, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. But West Virginia is going to return to be extremely successful in football. So athletically, everything is in a really good position. And obviously, we just need to take what we're dealing with now on a day-by-day basis, be very, very smart as we move toward exactly what the new world will look like. And hopefully we can, in fact, get back to our normal lives in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Very well said by all three of you. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Vocal Distancing. And we hope all of you and yours stay healthy and safe. We appreciate the time, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Adam. Good to see you, fellas.
Back at you, Mike.